seminar, Agelessness, lecture number 16. Terms I use to describe me as a limited human being. Terms I use to describe me as a limited human being. Lecture 16. Every one of us goes around with an attitude. And we go around with this attitude because we have caused ourselves to think that we are not who we are. One of the things the University of Healing stresses to every student is that our purpose in coming to existence on earth, our purpose in coming to existence on earth is one thing: to remember who we are. It's not to be ourselves and have fun, that's true, that's what it is, but it's to remember who we are. And you see, when you're trying to be yourself and have fun, and when you're trying to be number one, and you don't know who you are, it's not an easy thing to do. So, who really are you? Who really are you in the spectrum of the allness of things? What sort of person are you? Why are you here on planet Earth? Why did you come here, you know? Why didn't you go all the other possible places you could have gone this trip? Why have you chosen to come here to planet Earth? To remember who you are. It's a game. Now, we play the game in many ways. Sometimes we play the game as rich people with golden spoons in our mouth and silver spoons in our mouth and we've got everything. Sometimes we play the game as healthy people with wonderful health, dynamic, but sometimes we play Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, healthy Marilyn Monroe, beautiful bodies that just sort of turn us on and make us feel wonderful. And sometimes we like to have position as President of the United States, President of the United Nations. We want to be the leader of many wonderful people. We want to be the Pope. We want to be Swami Rama, Sai Baba. We want to be the Dalai Lama. We want to be all these wonderful people who people follow and listen to and say, my, my, you have something beautiful to say. Now, you see, we can be any one of those. But you chose to be who you are in this life experience because you wanted to see if you could remember who you are over this challenge. And this challenge that you have, you may be poor, you may be rich, you may be healthy, you may be sick, it doesn't matter. Whatever the challenge is, some people live their life in a wheelchair. Some people are quadriplegic. Quadriplegic. No arms, no legs. Wow. Might as well have no body. Wouldn't that be something? Just a head floating around. That'd be an interesting experience too. But some people create themselves with super brains. Geniuses. Mensa students of the ultimate, ultimate. And some people create themselves like an idiot. No control over their mental processes. Now I mention all these things, pro and con, because they're the game that you have chosen to play. Now, Ellen chose to play the game of a woman. She chose to play the game of coming to her family and living with them for a few years. And then she chose to have a rich aunt, Tante Lisa, right? And this rich Tante Lisa was supposed to leave her all sorts of goodies, and she didn't. And why didn't she? I mean, that was the game. She said she would, she should have, but she didn't. You changed the course. Somewhere, you changed the program. Not her. She has no possibility of changing the program in your life. But you changed it. So, then you had a mommy and a daddy who ultimately passed on. You had a sister who married and is living still in Germany. You have a husband, and he moved on. You have two children, and they're prolific, one at least. And they're producing children and having a wonderful life. And you vicariously live joyously in their experiences. But they make you forget why you're here. Who are you? Who are you? Why are you here? Are you here to have those experiences? Or are you here to, in view of, in fact of, those experiences, to be untouched? To always remember who you are. Can you always remember that you are divine? Can you always remember that you're God? That you're the creator of your world? Can you always remember that you are the ultimate of the ultimate of the ultimate of the ultimate? Wouldn't it be nice if we could, huh? Yeah. That's the test we have given to ourselves. Now, how are we going to conduct ourselves in that test from this point forward? Evan, why now?
Because all time is now.
Because now. Evan, why now? Because now. Give her the answer. You know? Okay, that's right. All time is now. And this is where we begin. And this is where we end. So, if we begin and we end right in this now, then what's the game? What's the game we're playing? The game we're playing is being God. Be that which you are. Now, you are divine. Can you ever speak a word contrary to your divinity? Or can you ever speak a word beyond your divinity? Is there such a thing? Can you speak a word beyond your absolute quality, beyond your comprehension, your awareness of all that exists in the universe? You know, Sometimes you think, there is a God, and that's me. But then there's a God that created me, that's a bigger God. And then there's a bigger God that created the God who created me. You'd be surprised how many people have many gods. And then there's a bigger God who's over all those things, who's creating that. But then the universe goes on ad infinitum to marvelous scopes and so, and perhaps there's some gods even bigger than that. But now, why do we do that? Why can't we just say, I am the creative cause of my universe, and my universe is the only universe that exists? Because on the relative level, that doesn't seem to be true. On the relative level, that seems to be contrary to anything that our mental attitude would allow us to believe. And because it's contrary to anything our mental attitude would let us believe, we find it hard to act in that respect. Ellen, your daughter calls you on the phone and says, Mama, which she never does. And you say, oh dear, oh dear. Or, are you God at all times?
I'm God.
And your daughter calls you on the phone and says, Mama. And you say, sweetheart, it is done. I don't want to hear any details, but it's done. Now, sweetheart, you just stay right there on the phone, but turn around and look at your world and see. It is done, see? It is done. But Mama, how did you know? How could you? Sweetheart, I'm your mom. I know everything. You don't have to say, I'm God, and I created you, and you're my creation, which is true. But, you know, I'm your mom. I know everything. Isn't that what moms are supposed to know? Eyes in the back of their head, they're supposed to know everything. And, you see, you've already got part of the gimmick going for yourself of being God, knowing everything and eyes in the back of your head sort of stuff, you know? So, take advantage of it. But you have to first believe in yourself. You have to first know that that's the game you're playing. when we read that amusing little tale the other day about the man who went to Florida, remember? He was sent to Florida. Yeah, he wasn't sent, he went to Florida because he's going on vacation. And so his wife was going to follow later because she had some work to do and then she's going to come. And so he got in Florida and he wrote to his wife an email saying, "Sweetheart, everything is all set for you. Everything's all set." And he sent it to his wife. But he had the wrong email for her. And it happened to go to a minister's wife. And the minister had just died the day before. And the wife was grieving, kind of sad. And she got this email. And the email said, "Sweetheart, I've arrived. And arrangements are all made for your arrival tomorrow. And P.S., it's kind of hot down here." Now you see, that you have that even in your consciousness, that there is a hell. That you have it even in your consciousness, that you're not the creator of your world, and that such a thing could happen. Now, I mean, wouldn't it be sad to live in a religion that only taught that? We've been there, y'all. We've been in religions that only taught that, and we didn't grow out of them, but we grew into the awareness of something greater. Something which didn't include sin, damnation, hell, all that good stuff that keeps people in line, you know. Dorothea, why do you always do beautiful things? So you stay out of hell?
It doesn't exist for me.
Ha! See, hell doesn't even exist for her. So how can I use that as a threat to her? No way. And you wouldn't fit in any traditional church, would you?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. You see, this is where we grow up. And each of us are growing a little bit, but not fully. Now, Lydia went to study under many great teachers, and she studied their writings, and she studied their work, and she was in many different countries, and she saw them at work, and she saw how nice many things were they did. How many had a beautiful philosophy that made them feel very comfortable, a beautiful philosophy that made them feel, you know, they had finally found it, and yet they were still searching. If they finally found it, why are they still searching? If you are a spiritual master and you have found your spiritual self, are you still on the path? You better not be, or else you got the wrong idea. If you have found your spiritual light, you're not on the path. And so all of these teachers who want to teach you how to find the spiritual path, who themselves have not yet found it, they're merely going to show you the path they're walking, not what they found, because they haven't found it yet. And hey, that's not bad. That's not bad. Our relative world is built on that concept. We show people how to find what we have found. And that's all we can do. When we have finally found who we really are as spiritual beings, what do we do, Gertrude? We live it.
Yeah.
Exactly. We live it. We don't care if anybody knows what we do or don't do. We don't care if we lift somebody up. Because why, Gertrude? We don't care if we lift somebody up. Why?
We are the only one, and we know.
We are the only one. There's nobody to lift up. There's nobody to lift up. There's no problems in the world when you have found it. When you have found your spiritual reality, when you found your spiritual beingness, there's nothing to change in the world. You live that fact that you found it, and you live in bliss, which is kind of nice. And do you know anybody who lives in bliss? Well, if you don't, just open your eyes and look in the mirror, you know? That's somebody who lives in bliss. Maybe not total bliss, but at least on the start. And you live in total bliss when you can cut this nose off. When you can stop thinking something outside of you is something that needs to be changed. If anything outside of you seems to need to be changed, it's your thought, our thought, that needs to be changed, if we want to change it. Or we just say, all is in divine order. And we are peace. Now, Ellen is riding her bicycle through Zurich. And she's driving along, just having a gay old time. And all of a sudden, she comes to a big puddle. It's not that she's got to drive through, it's right next to her. And the cars are driving through that puddle. Pshoom, pshoom, pshoom. They're splashing up over everywhere. Now, Ellen is a master, a spiritually illumined being who is aware of her allness. And as she's riding this bike, her first thought is, oh, I'm going to get splashed. No way. Her first thought is, isn't that a beautiful puddle? The water is calm and still. It's a beautiful puddle. She rides by the beautiful puddle. No car goes by at that instant. Nothing goes by, not even a bird. That puddle remains rippleless. It's just a still body of water. What happens after she's gone? That's up to the world. But in her world, in her experience, she is so master that she doesn't have any thought that that puddle might end up on her. If she does, it will end up on her because she is the master, creating the puddle ending up on her. Now maybe she's a little bit of a master, and so just a little bit of the puddle ends up on her, not the whole total puddle. But it could have been. You know, when Sir Walter Raleigh put his cloak over a puddle of water so the Queen could walk across, that could have been a deep puddle. And she could have sunk through her neck. But no, he put it across the puddle thinking it was just a little shallow puddle, and it was. But that's what he expected. And she created him being there, putting his cloak across that puddle. Now, she could also have created herself, the Queen, and her entourage, her followers, her people who worked for her, could have picked her up and carried her across, you know? She could have done a thousand things, but that was her day for Sir Walter Raleigh. And you see, we all have days for experiences. And these are fun things, but we are a master. We have come to this earth to remember what it is that we are. We are absolute. We are the ideal. We are the universal. We are the allness. And we're playing the game of being human. Now, do some masters play the game of being human and appear to have sicknesses or appear to have different things so that they can work with the people? Well, now just think. What do you think of Jesus? Pretty good? Pretty good. Pretty good guy. Okay. He knew who he was, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, did Jesus ever have a hunger?
No.
Did he ever have a thirst? He went to the well, but that's part of the story. He didn't need that water. Did Jesus ever need clothing?
No.
What did he have?
A seed cloak.
And all of Israel, there was no garment more glorious than his. The seamless garment. Richard, is it easy to make a seamless garment?
Yes.
See what Richard said? Do you know why she said that? Because she knows how to do it. See, she knows how to make a seamless garment. Now, why was a seamless garment so difficult in Jesus' time? Why was it so rare? Because it took a lot of work. It took a lot of work of continuously going around and around, and also fitting the sleeves in there, fitting the bodice in there, doing all the things, and making room so he could slip into it too, you know, and get his arms out in there. And there are no buttons. There's no zipper. There's no Velcro. It's just a seamless garment. It is easy to do. Now, Ingeborg here is knitting a sock. Is she knitting a seamless sock? She's knitting a seamless sock. Now, will that sock be seamless?
Yes.
Now, will she have a knot or two in it?
Yeah.
Does she need to have a knot or two?
No.
If she knew what she was doing, as having practiced a great deal, she would not even have to have a knot in there. She would have a beginning and an end, and that's all. And even the beginning and the end, she could blend together so that the thread became one with each other. I mean, you know, and really be seamless. Now, do we have manufacturers who make our garments like that? It's not practical. It's not practical to make a seamless garment because the cost benefit is not there. To make a seamless garment, it takes a little extra effort, a little extra work. And the normal garments that are this piece here and that piece here and this sole to that, and then if the person's size is too much, then you take it in or you let it out. You know, they have to always be considered in those facts. But can you imagine the person who knit, crocheted, or created Jesus' garment, how well they must have known his size? Well, he was an ordinary 30-year-old man, you know.
He probably did like this.
What's that, Ellen?
He spoke his word and he had his garment.
What's that, Ellen? That's not what you said. You said he probably.
Well, he did.
Have we ever been told who made his garment?
No.
Do you think you can ever find it out?
No.
Do you care?
No.
That's right. Can you do the things that he did?
Yes.
Are you going to do them or are you doing them?
We are doing. I am doing them.
Okay. You see, when you play this game, you have to play this game with an innocence, a childlike innocence. And you say to the child, I want you to do this here. And the child says, it won't work. And you say, well, how come you say it won't work? Because I know it won't work. Well, what do you think you are, you little stupid kid? You know, you're 5 years old. What do you think? You know everything? You know that it won't work? How do you know that it won't work? You know. And the kid says, hey, I know it won't work. Bye-bye. And he goes his way. And of course, it doesn't work. He knew intuitively it didn't work. Now, he didn't have the ability to say, it will not work because of this. He could have. He didn't have the desire to say that, especially not to the person he was talking to. And he didn't have the desire to say to the person he was talking to, now, if you would just sit down for a second and meditate on this, you would come up with a solution on how to do it. Doing it the way you're doing it, it won't work because it is not harmonious with itself. But if you would stop, but see, an adult would never do that. An adult would never do that, especially if a kid tells them. Because we have been taught to believe that children are unaware of what's going on in the world, and that they're just learning it year by year, step by step. Well, it's us who are training ourselves year by year to learn it step by step as we get older. When we're younger, we know it all. When we're younger, we know everything. And we are untouchable. Nothing can go wrong in our life. And if it does, we instantly forget it. And we only remember what goes right in our life. We are here to remember where we came from and who we are. Now, where do we come from? The infinite cosmos. Well, that doesn't sound very exciting. We come from the allness. That doesn't sound exciting either. We come from the planet of unconditional love. That sounds nice. That sounds like a fun place to be. Well, then that's okay. Say, you're from the planet of unconditional love. That's okay. You can say anything you want. Just remember, you are the master of yourself. And if you are out of the infinite awareness of divinity, okay? if you're out of the divine reality, who's to say you can't take a couple of steps on your way down here to earth, stopping off the planet of unconditional love? You know? Picking up a few pointers there that you're going to bring down here. No reason why not. How about if you stopped at the sun? What if you stopped at a black hole or a white hole in outer space? Wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't it be interesting to go through experiences like that? You see, terms I use to describe me as a limited human being are so vast and so many and so silly, because I have to make myself understood by other human beings. I have to make myself understood by other human beings. I have to make myself understood by other human beings. Stop me.
There's no other being. There's no other being, no other human beings.
I don't have to make myself understood to anybody but me. And even I don't have to understand me. I just what?
Be myself and have fun.
Be.
I just am.
What?
I just am.
Yeah, you just am, you just be. Yeah. And when you be, I be, then what?
And I'm a
bee. That's it.
And I am IBM.
How about that? Yeah. And Mr. IBM is going to love you. then we IBM. That's right. Then we am what we IBM. And that's great. So just remember now, why do we have to be what we are? Can we not be what we are?
We are always who we are.
We always are who we are, but do we always outpicture who we are? And we don't have to. You see, we can play theater. Mm-hmm. We can pretend that we're on stage and we are some actor acting out some play. And we do that all the time. We pretend that we are human beings. Oh my, how many people pretend they're human beings? Now, how many people pretend they're divine beings and don't even know what a divine being is?
They don't pretend.
How many people, what?
When you're a divine being, you don't pretend.
Ellen, you pretend you're everything. You pretend you're a divine being, a human being. You pretend everything because it's a game. Why did you come down to planet Earth and come down? That doesn't. Why did you materialize on planet Earth to have the experience here when you are divine? You are all. You are fantastic. You don't need to do this. Why did you do that?
Okay.
It's fun. It's a game. Now, you play chess, and you play it very well. So you play it with 10 people, you know, 10 games of chess. And you walk around the room playing 10 games of chess. Now, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of mental activity. You're just going, looking at all these chess boards and figuring out what the person's doing there and what you can do to foil them or to bring them out so they'll mess themselves up. See, that's the creative chess man doesn't make the best move for himself. He makes the worst move for the other person, so that the other person will be tempted to make a move that will put them in trouble because they think it's so obvious and so good. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
They think that moving this man over here, wow, he didn't see that, he didn't. Well, he sure did see that. And he planted that like a little attraction for you to make you want to do that. Because the minute you do that, and you're blinded to what the next steps are going to be, because that looks so good,
uh-huh.
The minute you do that, he's going to go, kluk, 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 you know, and just wipe you out. But you don't know it because you are blinded by the sucker move, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a... And then, now, that's what fun is there in that? Well, it is a game, and because it's a game, it doesn't hurt anybody. I'll kill myself, but I'm gonna, you know. People say that of the games, and it's so silly. But It's just a game. And when we can play all of life here as a game, then what do? We don't fall for the sucker moves. If we find $1 million lying on the ground and there's nobody around, we say, look this way, that way, we look all around, see if anybody's watching, you know. But we forgot one person, ourselves. We're watching. Is that my money? Did I find it? Did it belong to me? Is it my money? If it's not mine, do I need anything ever that doesn't belong to me? There are temptations to pick up things, to do things. See a beautiful set of earrings lying on the ground, and there's nobody around for miles, and it's in the middle of the road. Trucks are going to come run over it, and whatever, and horses' hoofs are going to clutter it down. And sure, well, I better pick that up, you know. I mean, that's mine. I mean, I found it. No. It is a sucker move. It is a temptation to you to take something that is not yours. Well, how do you get anything that's yours? Well, whatever is yours, you manifest it, or you buy it, or you have it given to you. Now, someone could come running across the street and grab the earrings and say, oh, I dropped them, but I've got 6 sets here, and I don't need them, but I dropped it. I can't afford to drop. Instead, would you like one of these? And you say, "Pearl, thank you very much, you know. And then she says, weren't you tempted to pick them up in front of you? And no, because they didn't belong to me. I mean, you would have left those $1 million earrings lying in the street there just because they didn't belong to you, and they would be destroyed? Hey, I don't need to play by somebody else's rules. I play the game of life by my rule. My integrity is so sacrosanct. My integrity is so much in me, I could not violate my integrity even if I tried to, because it just is not my nature. It would be like picking up doggy doo. You know, you pick it up only to put it away. You don't pick it up to take it home in your pocket, you know. So anything that doesn't belong to us, it just doesn't belong to us. And if we do take it, it will soon make us feel very unhappy. We will figure out ways, how can I give this back to the person it belongs to? Why did I pick it up? If I hadn't picked it up, the person would probably come right along and pick it up right away, because, you know, that's part of a game. I'm creating this as my game, my test. And you remember the one about the two monks, that they were at the river's edge, remember? And monks are not supposed to touch a woman. You understand that?
Yes.
So you girls aren't supposed to touch a woman. So monks aren't supposed to touch a woman. And so the two monks came to the edge of the river, and this woman, very beautiful woman, was standing there, and she said she didn't want to get her skirts wet, and asked, would one of the monks carry her across? And one monk said, sure, picked her up, carried her over, put her down, and then the two monks went on their way. And finally, after a while, the other monk, in anger and uptightness and stuff, said to the first monk, how dare you pick up a woman? We're not supposed to touch a woman, don't you know that? And the first monk said, yes, I picked her up, but I put her down on the other side of the river, and you haven't put her down yet. You see? You haven't put her down. See, this is where we get in our trouble. We judge. And we don't put things down. We pick up things that don't belong to us. Now, the first monk picked it up but put it down. And not that he was right or wrong, that's not the point. But the other monk didn't even put it down. He mentally had picked her up too, and he mentally carried her, and he mentally kept her. And that's totally contrary to the monkites-ism. And so this is something that we all have to become aware of in who and what we're doing. Because we're doing some fantastic things. Now, terms I use to describe me as a limited human being, I say I'm wise. What a joke. I'm not wise. I know everything. And since I know everything, I know what's going to happen, I know what is happening, I know it has happened, and I know the right thing to do at the right moment in the right way. I know. It's not a matter of wisdom. It's a matter, I know. Within me there's something that says, I know. And when we listen to that something within us that says, I know, then we're all right. But most of the time we don't listen because we don't remember who we are. See, if we remember that we're divine, then we would listen within and we'd have great things happening. Now, think about this. We have words like majority, lifetime, period of time, generation, mellowness, ripeness, everlasting, dotage, timeless, eternal, durability, endurance, permanence, unending, deathless, immortal. A whole bunch of terms we use as a limited human being for what we think is unlimited. But are they truly unlimited? What are they? All they are human ways of looking at life. And the more that we look at life from a human point of view, the more we age. Because when we look at it from the divine point of view, we never age. We are ageless. When we look at life from the divine point of view, we live in immortality. We live in eternity. We could be living hundreds of years old, and no one would ever know it because we look like we're 18. We look like we're an ageless being. We look like someone who has no age. Now, are you a person who has no age?
Yes.
When you look in the mirror, you say, "Hi, God," and mean it. Say, "Hi, God." Gee, it's wonderful. I'm having such a great day. God, you're a good-looking guy. God, oh, you're fantastic. God, I love you. Now, do you say things like that in the mirror? Or do you break it when you do that? Yeah. When you say things like that in the mirror, then the God in you and the God that you are, which is all the same, likes you. We talked about the energy massage, and you touch yourself just like this here. You're telling your body you like it so that your body will say, "Oh, hey, then I will put on my best bib and tucker. I will look beautiful and I'll look wonderful. I will have every cell in my body absolutely perfect. I will have my eyes absolutely perfect, my ears, nose, and my digestive system. Everything about me will be perfect because the guy who lives in here likes me. He likes me." You know? Can you say that about yourself, that you like yourself and mean it? Or if I catch you unaware, now for instance, Ingeborg. If Ingeborg's sister, sister or niece or whoever, would call up on the phone and say, "Hi Ingeborg, how you doing?" "Well, I'm doing better, but you know, Ingeborg." What would you say to them if they called up on the phone and said, "How you doing, Ingeborg?"
"I'm perfect. I'm whole and perfect. I'm well. I'm whole and..."
You're talking to people who are people who are normal human beings. They're beautiful, normal human beings. And so you say, "I'm whole and perfect." And they say, "Well, she sure is a kooky one, isn't she?" You would say to them, "Oh, you know..."
"Enjoy life."
"Oh, that's getting better. Now, what else would you say?"
"I live in paradise."
Yeah, garbage. Say, "I live in a wonderful place. And I live where the sun likes to shine. And where it's warm and toasty." Yeah, some days it's a little cool. But where it's warm and toasty. "I live in the most wonderful place." You say paradise, and they'll think, "Oh, is that the name of the city?" You know? But when you speak relative, speak relative. Now, if you say to Ellen, Ellen says, "Well, Ingeborg, how are you doing?" She says, "I'm home perfect." And, "Well, Ingeborg, where are you living?" You know, because you're living somewhere. "I'm living in paradise." "Well, where is that?" "Well, I have a little cabin on the top of the mountain. And I just have my little garden around it. And I have my dogs and my cats and my mice and my rats and my horses and cows and pigs and chickens and stuff like that." And you say, "My, doesn't that keep you busy?" And Ingeborg says, how could that keep me busy? I'm in paradise.
These are my friends.
Yeah, look at my face. I'm surrounded by beautiful people who just feel delighted to do things for me. The neighbor boy, on the way home from school, he stops at my house every day and milks my cows. Mm-hmm. The neighbor girl comes by every morning before she goes to school and picks up all the eggs from my chickens, you know, and so forth and so on, you know. And what a wonderful series of stories, you know. Would that delight your human friends? Would it delight you? Kind of nice, huh? But you see, create your story. Create your story. Now, where does Ingeborg want to live? She wants to live in a wonderful place, doing all the things that she wants to do. Now, Ingeborg, how about climbing up and down that hill? Isn't that irksome sometimes? Isn't that a bother?
It's a joy.
Oh, come on. It's a joy. Now, Ingeborg, I love it. It makes my body feel alive and dynamic. I run up and down the mountain. I run up and down the hill. I feel so great. Ingeborg, how old are you?
I'm ageless.
I'm ageless. Isn't that wonderful? I'm ageless. See, she got the right word, too. I'm ageless. And Ingeborg, if you're ageless and running up and down a hill, and you've been doing it for 200 years now, at least you're 200 years old, you say, I'm ageless. If you knew how old, how many years that is I've been around, you would say, 200, that's nothing, you know? But, you see, you're ageless. And what difference does it make? The only difference is, what is the image you have of yourself? What is it that you describe yourself with? And when you describe yourself with terms that you can accept, I am the allness, I am the isness, I am the absolute, and fooly booty boo, you know, what does that mean? It sounds kind of pompous and kind of biggish, but what does it mean? What does it mean for you when you say, I say to you, well, how are you doing today? And you say to me,
I'm wonderful.
No, I'm having the time of my life. I'm out here chopping wood. I'm out here riding on my horses.
Turning the soil.
Yeah, see, you can think of it too. I'm turning the soil. Are you doing it with your fork, your pitchfork, or your hoe, or your the thing, the plow that you put behind your horse? Or do you have a tractor too?
Yes.
My goodness. And all these, there's just people walking by on the way somewhere else, stopping by, giving you a hand, them? Okay. Or do you have a regular handyman?
I do everything by myself.
Ooh-wee. What a magnificent woman, I tell you. Now, remember, Ingeborg, you said that.
Yes.
You know you're a master of yourself. You know you're creator of your world. And doesn't it feel wonderful?
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it make you feel young and beautiful?
Yes.
Young and beautiful. Da 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 da. Be that way, be that way, be that way. Get up. Get up. Don't sit on your sewing needle. Get up. Now, prance across the room for us, okay? Yeah, straighten out those legs. You've been sitting there for a while. Come on, prance across the room here. Come on, you've got perfect balance. Ah, my God, jump over the candle. Jack, be nimble, Jack, be quick. Jack jumped over the candlestick. Now, stretch out your legs a little more and walk. Forward, not up. Up is good too, but forward. And so that, oh, now you're in gear. Now you're in gear. Once again, back again. Oh, terrific. You're doing just lovely. You are fantastic. Come on, a little more speed in there. A little more lippity-doody-da. Yeah. Now, try to run just a little bit. Turn around, try to run. Now, try to run. Not try, run. That's great. Now, run back there again. Back there again. Come on. Ingeborg, you are fantastic!
Yay.
Ingeborg, you are magnificent!
I can't believe it.
Sit down and knit. But you see, we are our own creator. And when we forget Now, I pushed that knitting needle a little further from your seat. That's the way. I'm afraid she'd get up quickly.
But that wouldn't be bad either.
That wouldn't be bad either. It could be a little sting. Well, we are beautiful, I tell you. Now, you have just seen an illustration of someone who thought they couldn't and then thought they could. And it was just a matter of a thought, and they did it. Now, did you expect that she was going to run back and forth here today?
Yes.
She's wonderful, isn't she?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, Sylvia, get up. Sylvia, you're fantastic. Yeah. Sylvia, run over to the door. Run back again. All right, Sylvia, don't do it, but jump over the candlestick. I wouldn't want you to hurt that. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Okay, now, what does it feel like?
Well, like me?
Yeah. That was good.
And don't you ever forget it.
That was good.
You are that healthy, wholesome, dynamic, fantastic woman who just is always on top of everything. Right?
Right.
Okay. Now, Dorothea, are you going to put on a little show for us for a moment?
I did this morning for you.
Come, come. I'm not interested in what you did. I'm interested in what you do. You are a fabulous lady.
Well, that I am.
That you am.
That's me.
You got so much stuff on all sides, you're hard to find a place to stand up, huh? Okay. Now, Dorothea?
Yes?
On your feet. You're not supposed to crawl across the room. All right, now, Dorothea, now watch. Dorothea is going to touch your toes and touch the heavens and touch your toes and touch the heavens. No, the heavens are up there.
Yeah.
Now, touch your toes. All the way. Now,
look.
Heavens. Yeah. The heavens again and the toes. Okay. Now, can you walk across the room for us?
Oh, well, yes. That's what I can do.
That I can do. Okay. Now, jog back.
Do what?
Jog back.
Jog.
Let's sort of short run. That's good. That's good. A little more jog.
Ah,
oh,
yay!
That's fine. Okay. Now, run back. Let's see how you... Oh,
well,
I
haven't done that for some time.
I know. It's about time you run again. You did beautifully.
Yes.
Now, the next thing is, are you going to jump over the candlestick?
No.
No. That's cool. That's smooth.
Yes.
Now, Dorothea?
Yes?
Is this what you do every day?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you climb up the staircase to your apartment every day?
Many times.
Up and down? Why don't you get an apartment on the first floor?
Not there.
You like to ascend?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, the logical, reasonable reasons aren't what I'm asking for. You don't want an apartment on the first floor because you delight in climbing the stairs. You do, or else you wouldn't do it. Hey, there's a lot of what do you call these, California Rancho type units that you could have. They're all on one floor. And you can go out your back door, your front door, and you're right on the level, just like you do in your in the embassy here. You go out your bedroom door, you go out your bedroom door to the garage, you go out your bedroom door to the car drive, you go out your bedroom door to your swimming pool, you go out your bedroom door to your gymnasium, you go out your bedroom door to your jacuzzi, you go out your bedroom door to your
who's
kitchen.
Who's taking care of this?
Huh?
Who's taking care?
Who
of
cares? When you're God, when you're the creator of your world, you're like Ingeborg. You have the neighbor boys and girls walking by and say, may I help you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I want to be part of this beautiful lady, this beautiful person. Is that understood? Okay, we're doing pretty well. So, it is time for us to take a pause and... now that you're up, you can stay up. So, I think we have had a demonstration of what it means when we say terms I use to describe me as a limited human being and as a divine human being. Dorothea, where did you come from?
Heaven.
You came out of the allness, right?
Oh.
Right. Ingeborg, where did you come from?
Out of the allness, her.
That's great. And Sylvia, where did you come from?
From the planet of unconditional love.
Oh, she made a stop on the way down.
Yes.
On the planet of unconditional love. And what did you learn there, Sylvia?
Unconditional love.
Sylvia, would you like to stand and give us a demonstration of unconditional love in one of its many, many, many ways? Just stand. All right, now give us a demonstration of unconditional love in any way that comes to your mind.
I love you.
Well, I love you. I mean, go stick your head in a barrel, you know. Just say, I love you.
I love you.
Isn't that a lot better?
Yes.
We don't need to stick our head in the barrel.
Oh,
I'm going to get a hug now, too. Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I remember you, you know.
Oh, you remember me, huh? She remembers me.
I met you there.
Okay. I love you. I love you. I love you. Where's the thing running here? I'm going to shut this off somehow. There we go. Thank you.